Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Delighted to have you with us. Here we are Wednesday, 10 a.m., as we are every week. And we're going to have a good show today. Going to be talking with Colleen Kelly. She is president of the National Treasury Employees Union. Been around a long time. Knows the ropes. And this is an interesting time to be able to talk to a union president. And then later on in the show, we're going to be visiting with the Federal Times folks and get a different perspective on some different issues. Colleen, are you with us?
I am, Mike.
Hey, I appreciate you coming on the show. I would call you Madam President, but it's pretentious. We've known each other, 106 years or something?
At least.
Yes.
At least.
You were a child, and I was too.
But I wouldn't know who you were talking to.
There you go. Yeah. No, tell us a little something about the NTEU, will you?
NTEU was organized in 1938, started off representing IRS employees, and we will be celebrating our 75th anniversary in 2 years. And today we represent over 150,000 federal employees in 31 agencies across many departments of the federal government.
You know, I'm surprised that maybe once a week or so I'll get an email from somebody and they'll say, are there any unions in the government? Which is astounding to me because there are a number of unions. They're extremely active. They're extremely vocal. But I guess people tune out for some reason.
It is. That's very disheartening. It is possible. There are a few agencies where there is no union representation in the federal government, but that's pretty rare if they're eligible to be represented. So it is disheartening when we get those questions because there are so many frontline NTU members and leaders who are working hard on behalf of federal employees every day.
Yeah, we don't know what we don't know sometimes. Colleen, before I got some specific email questions for you, but I wanted to ask you about the reorganization that the president is proposing. What's your take on this as far as being for a better, leaner, meaner government and for the employees involved?
Well, of course, I think we all would agree that the government needs to be as efficient as possible, but that does not happen necessarily by reorganizing. It happens with the involvement of frontline employees and who have a lot of really good ideas about how to do the work of government better. So when I heard about what the White House was proposing, we're looking at it very closely, Mike, but they're asking for reorganization authority with an up or down vote by Congress without any debate. And from NTU's perspective, we've seen these proposals in the past and we've had some concerns in the past. We think that Congress plays an important role in proposing whether it's the creation or the dissolution or the merging of agencies. There's a lot of debate that needs to go on around that. There's never going to be a one-size-fits-all. And it's also through the legislative process that the public gets to weigh in on those kinds of things, how it will impact them from a service perspective. So we're concerned about, reorganization authority that would occur, as has been proposed. And we've been concerned about it in the past when it was proposed also. As far as the current reorganization that they say they're talking about, which is commerce, we represent employees at the Patent and Trademark Office, but we really don't have any specific information yet about how it would impact those employees or the specific employees, the employees within the specific agencies. So I think we have more questions right now than anything else about the proposal.
I believe I read when the reorganization was announced that they were talking about eliminating 2,000 jobs?
Well, that's what one of the reports said. Again, we have not received any specific information. We're awaiting that. And until then, you hear all the rumors, and we don't really know what the intent is or what the impact would be, not only on the employees, which is critically important, of course, for NTU, but also on the American public that is served by the agencies doing that important work.
Another subject, the federal pay raise. When the president announced or budgeted for a 0.5% raise, half a percentage point, I thought people would rise up in arms, but the reaction was fairly mellowed. And somebody told me it's because the unions were expecting nothing and that 0.5 is a start.
Well, there have been so many proposals to extend the pay freeze that there was a lot of concern by NTU and by our members. So many proposals, especially coming out of the House, were focused on extending the pay raise. So we were very concerned And we were adamant, though, that it was time for the pay freeze to end, for it to be said out loud, for it to be acknowledged that federal employees, through the two-year pay freeze that they're currently under, have already contributed over $60 billion over the next 10 years by with that pay freeze. And so, you know, our priority was a statement and a position taken that said the pay freeze is over, and that happened. So I think for many who were concerned about an additional 1 or up to 3 years extended to the pay freeze, it was seen as good news. The 0.5%, of course, was a disappointment. I think there were many, because of the two-year pay freeze, who rightly were looking for a number that was a little more significant. But that is far, far from over. As we know, it's only January, and even in the best of years, which I don't think we're in, it usually takes until the end of the year for that to be finalized. There will be many efforts focused at that over the next 11 months. That NTU will be on top of. And in addition to that, we're going to continue to identify savings across agencies that we think they can free up money that could be better spent, and we think that would be better spent with more of a pay raise for federal employees. So this conversation and final decision on the 2013 pay raise, I would say, is far from over.
Because in the past, under both Democratic and Republican presidents, the unions and a lot of Washington area members of Congress, Republicans and Democrats, have sort of had an informal coalition that did an end run around President Clinton and then President Bush and got higher raises for people. And the president has budgeted for a 1.6% raise, I believe, for military people. Do they have, feds have a shot at getting pay parity?
I think the issue of pay parity is a question that's probably going to take a couple years to get back on track, just because of the economics of the country. And federal employees recognize that. I think that's part of what you saw when you saw the mellowed reaction that you described, or kind of the mixed bag reaction, is, you know, I think there's a recognition that, you know, this is not going to be corrected overnight, the, you know, the economic circumstances in the country. And but federal employees believe they have made more than their fair share of a contribution, and I think that's right. I think they're right to believe that. So the belief that it was time for the freeze to be over, like I said, that is seen as good news, you know, on the statement and the position of the administration. And now we have to see the whole economy turn so that we can get back on track, not only with pay parity, but with the formulas that are in place by law, which are supposed to measure the January pay raise for federal employees, to just allow them to keep up with things like increasing health care costs and increasing gasoline prices, and, you know, things that everyone is facing. Federal employees are not immune to those increased costs, and the fact that they're under this pay freeze, you know, has made it very difficult for federal employees who are middle America in so many cases.
Yes, several people have done the math for us and said that if they got a 0.5% raise, it would just about cover their health insurance increases for next year.
And I think that's what many are looking to do, you know, to stay even is what people are trying to do until, you know, we can turn the bigger corner as a country.
One of the things, the subject of today's Federal Report column is the leap year effect, if you will. February 29th, this joint House-Senate committee is supposed to make recommendations for ways to cut the deficit and to avoid sequestration. And among them, there are a number of proposals that would certainly be harmful to federal workers.
Well, most things coming out of the House these days would be harmful to federal workers.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, we have, there's a litany of them that have come in the last 12 to 14 months, and NTU's expectation is, unfortunately, they will continue to come throughout 2012, if for no other reason than because it's an election year and because those who have been proposing it are still there in the House. I wish that that would change for federal employees. I think it is just so unfair and inappropriate that they're targeted the way they are by these House Republicans in particular. I do think that it will continue. That's what I tell our members, that it's going to be a challenging year. But we have the facts on our side, and, of course, we're going to continue to make our voices heard, and I think that will increase in an election year. I think you're going to see federal employees who want to have their voices heard more and more as November approaches.
Got a couple of questions, email questions here, but need to take a short break, and we'll be right back talking with Colleen Kelly, president of the National Treasury Employees Union, here on 1500 AM.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
It is one of our most sophisticated drones, and Iran claims that it was hijacked using a flaw in the GPS guidance system. They got the drone to think that it was in Afghanistan when it was actually still in Iran, and so the drone landed at its home base, thinking it was home base, right, but actually it was in Iran.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Washington Capitals are bringing the excitement of hockey to local classrooms with Caps at School. Caps at School is a free online curriculum-enhancing teaching tool for grades 1 through 6 that uses the sport of hockey to teach science, math, language, art, health, and physical education. Teachers and students participating in Caps at School can also win visits from Capitals players and Slapshot teachers. For more information on how to enroll your class for free, visit capsatschool.com.
Dude, check out my new Pioneer DEH44 car stereo with built-in HD radio technology and new HD2 HD3 channels.
HD2 HD3 channels?
Get with it, man. HD2 HD3 channels are all these new free digital radio channels.
How do I listen to them?
With the new Pioneer DEH44 HD radio receiver. It's only $120 at Walmart.
Walmart? That's cool.
Yeah, just go to HDradio.com and check out the station guide. They're adding new channels all the time.
Learn about HD radio technology at HDradio.com. More radio, more value.
Moving your enterprise to the cloud doesn't mean you have to let go of IT control. With BMC's proven cloud lifecycle management from IronBow, you can visualize and manage data and applications in public, private, or hybrid clouds through a single pane of glass. It gives you the control you need to deliver peak performance for users. Find out more about BMC Cloud Lifecycle Management and the BMC Public Sector Forum at IronBow.com. Keep your IT in view and under control in the cloud.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does 3 decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit capitalareafoodbank.org.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight is the Capital Area Food Bank. Sitting down to 3 meals a day shouldn't be a choice, but over 640,000 residents in the National Capital Region are forced to choose daily. Record numbers of families and children are struggling to get enough food to eat. Help the Capital Area Food Bank feed our neighbors in need. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com. This message brought to you by Papa John's and Federal News Radio.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey talking with Colleen Kelly. She's the president of the National Treasury Employees Union. And Colleen, how many agencies does NTE represent people?
31 agencies, Mike.
That is incredible. So you from the old, I remember the old days when you were NAIR, not the hair removal, but the National Association of Internal Revenue Employees, I believe, NAIR, yeah.
That's
well,
right.
Come a long way. Colleen, a couple of questions here, if I could, and then there's one I believe I sent you that I'll answer off air because it's just too complicated. This is from somebody on Long Island said, how many offices is the IRS closing? We're in a small post of duty in eastern Suffolk County, New York, and after spending countless taxpayer dollars on completing a new office half a mile away, are now scheduled to close on January 26th and be reassigned to another office 33 miles away. Not only is this a burden to the local taxpayers, but it is in effect a pay cut for the employees at this office who will now be forced to drive due to lack of public transportation in rush hour traffic.
Yeah, well, going back to the bigger part of the question, how many offices is the IRS closing, there is not a designated list of offices that they are closing, and I'm going to look into the specifics of this question about East Suffolk County. I just don't have those specifics at my fingertips, but I will say this, that the IRS is, because of the 2012 budget that they were given by Congress, is being forced to make an awful lot of cuts in a lot of things. They have recently made buyout offers, and over 1,000 employees took those offers. They have just offered another 400 employees buyouts in order to be able to live within their 12 budget. So they have been looking at all kinds of savings, and that will include, in the short term and in the long term, I believe, the issue of real estate and, you know, the cost that they pay for offices across the country. There are over 700 IRS offices, but I, like I said, I just don't have the specifics on this one, and I'm going to look into that, and I'll get back to
very good.
To the
office. Okay, that's good. Yeah, and this is one of those things. The budget was cut, and what are you going to do? So something has to go.
Well, especially to an agency that brings in the revenue that funds the rest of the federal government. That was the most really outrageous thing about the IRS budget this year, and I'm sure what they'll be facing in the 13 budget is no recognition that they are the agency that brings in 93%, Mike, of all the money that funds the rest of the federal government, 93%. So why wouldn't you fund that agency?
And what does it cost? What's the cost of bringing in a dollar of revenue?
Well, it depends if you measure it just by enforcement or overall. The National Taxpayer Advocate just said in their report, for every $1 invested in the IRS, they collect $200 in revenue. So when you think about that and the impact on the deficit, if there's their budget this year is actually a cut of $305 million. So you can add to that over $4 billion to the deficit, according to the IRS commissioner.
Well, one of the presidential candidates has recommended eliminating the IRS, which would be 100,000 people added to the jobless rolls. I take it you don't think that's a particularly useful idea.
Well, I don't, but especially if you play that out against the facts that who's going to bring in the revenue that funds the VA and Homeland Security and Social Security and the EPA and fill in the blank, whatever the services are that our country depends on that Americans just assume will be taken care of every day? Where will the money come from to fund those programs?
I guess we all figure out what we think we owe and send it in cash to the Treasury. Another question here. This may be too much down in the weeds for you. Says currently USA Jobs lists open positions that would be promotions for many qualified internal employees. Maybe the NTU president should remind management that it's more cost effective to fill these positions with internal applicants. Additionally, records of the amount of internal applicants hired for positions versus outside applicants hired for positions should be maintained and made available. Furthermore, the hiring managers should be able to explain why they chose to spend more of the taxpayers' money on hiring an external applicant. And I know that's been a concern of yours and other union leaders, these intern programs, which some people thought were ways to skirt the merit system and go around longtime employees.
Exactly, Mike. The most recent one that NTU fought and was able to have rescinded was the Federal Career Intern Program, the FCIP. That was eliminated by an executive order by the president, which was very, very good news because that FCIP hiring program definitely hurt internal applicants because jobs were not posted internally and merit principles were not applied. And what I will say in general is NTU has fought very hard and continues to fight to ensure that internal applicants are at least considered for vacancies and for career advancement within their agencies. That is always a priority for NTEU. But what I will tell you is just as hard as NTU fights for to ensure that internal applicants are considered for promotion opportunities, most agencies do not want any kind of consideration given to internal applicants. They want to be able to look wherever they want to, and that usually means outside the agency. So this is a constant tension between employees and the unions and the agencies who are looking for two different things. And from NTU's perspective, what I always say to the agencies is NTU is not looking for a guarantee of a selection for internal applicants, but what we want is first and fair consideration. At least give them a shot. Why wouldn't you, for all the reasons asked in this question to you, why wouldn't you first look at your current employees and see if there are employees there who have worked hard and deserve the opportunity and have been successful for the agency? Why not give them an opportunity?
Have any hiring officials ever sort of confirmed this attitude to you or explained why? I mean, I can understand why they want freedom to look anywhere, you know, the best and brightest and all that. But is there actually, you think, a bias against people who are on the job in the government? Uncle Sam figures they've got them and that's it?
I think for many managers there is a bias to look outside first. I don't think for all of them, but I think in general, they look around and they say, no, I don't see what I want here, so I'm going to go to the street and not even give these people first consideration. And again, that's what NTU is looking for, is consideration, that you're given fair consideration for opportunities, not a guarantee.
Colleen, I appreciate you being here today. I know you were going to attend a labor management meeting, which is going on, I guess, even as we speak. What do they talk about at these meetings? These are regular meetings, correct?
They are. They're regularly scheduled meetings, and they we had started off with an agenda that was pretty structured within the specifics of the executive order. The union's goal is to expand those areas, those agenda items, and we're working on that. We're working through right now some specific reports that are required by the executive order that have to be submitted based on the work of the forums across agencies, and of course we want to comply with that. So that's what the focus has been on for now. But I think there's a potential there for much a better conversation, much earlier information about things that the federal employees care about and it impacts them in their daily working lives.
Well, I know the Obama administration, when it came in, promised it would do a better job of dealing with unions than the Bush administration had done. Are they keeping their word?
I think over time we have figured out some processes that have been better than they've been in the past. And we do get earlier information and an opportunity at least to have our suggestions and our recommendations heard on issues, even if they are, not in a public setting, but in a way that really they can be heard and considered. And that's what I'm looking for, is an opportunity to be able to weigh in on these things before decisions are made. So I would say we've definitely made some progress.
Colleen, do you see coming up? I think you said that it's very unlikely that federal workers are going to be getting decent raises for a while, just because of the economic situation. So, is this a period of hard times?
You know, I think it is, Mike, and I think the real kind of hit you between the eyes reality of it is that right now the House and the Senate have a conference committee that are dealing with this payroll tax extension. Right now, of course, this payroll tax that puts 2% in the pockets of every American who pays into Social Security is going to expire at the end of February. And in the conference, one of the things they have to figure out is, will it be extended till the end of the year? And if so, how will it be paid for? The House proposal all last year to fund this payroll tax holiday was based on a series of proposals focused on federal employees. They wanted to pay for this on the backs of federal employees. They proposed another one-year extension of the pay freeze, increases in employee pension contributions of 1.5% phased in over 3 years, and that increased pension contribution would not result in one dime of increased benefits, only an increased cost to the employees, as well as the elimination of the Social Security supplement that I heard you mention earlier. So there is a very real threat, again, as we speak, of what will happen with the 2013 pay raise, whether it will be the 0.5%, whether it will be another number, whether it will be another attempt at a freeze. So we are working very hard at NTU, and I've called on all of the House and Senate conferees to oppose offsetting the extension of this two-month payroll tax holiday with any further cuts to middle-class federal employees.
Colleen, we'll get you back in a couple of months and see how this is shaking out. Thank you so much, Colleen Keller, for being with us. Take a short break here, and then we'll visit with the Federal Timesman.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Join host Michael Keegan for a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. Leaders Speak, a conversation on leadership and public service. What makes an effective leader? Why pursue a career in public service? Over a dozen past and current government executives shared their extended reflection on the next Business of Government Hour.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Navy Rear Admiral retired Elizabeth A. Height, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector Cybersecurity Practice, HP Enterprise Services, on the Cybersecurity Combating Threats to Our Software Environment panel, sponsored by Hewlett-Packard.
Look at what the National Defense Authorization Act, signed last January, has required the Department of Defense to do, and that is require the department to implement software security assurance capabilities for both deployed software and that software that is being delivered.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective, and that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys are now training their sights on a new target: exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help government secure mission-critical applications by designing security in from the beginning, finding the vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com/HP.
Start 2012 with a buy one, get one sale from ARS Rescue Router Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing. If you buy a new air conditioner by February 15th, you could receive a free select furnace. Make your home comfortable all year with a new energy-efficient HVAC system. Financing options available. Call 866-267-3588 or go to arsofdcmetro.com to schedule a time today with a trusted comfort advisor. Act fast. Sale ends February 15th. Restrictions apply. Ask for a representative or arsofdcmetro.com for details.
A new tool allows you to give opinions about video content, say a politician's debate performance, without doing survey forms. All you need to do is watch. Give permission and your computer's camera records your face as you watch the screen. New software called Aftex then instantly analyzes even the slightest changes in your facial expressions.
The software finds different points on your face that correspond to your eyebrows and your mouth and your cheeks and so forth, and tracks them as they move.
Rosalind Picard of MIT's Media Lab says when watching a video, those facial expressions
convey the experience of the person viewing it.
And she says it can be confidential.
We're not pulling out identity information. In many cases, all we're doing is we're counting smiles.
To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I just had a nice conversation with Colleen Kelly, president of the National Treasury Employees Union. And now is the time in the show when we talk to the Federal Times people. And today we've got Sean Riley, who's a senior writer, and one of the relatively newer people, Andy Medici. And I'm going to be delighted to have you both. And Sean Sr., I guess that means they put the defibrillator near your office, correct?
That's right. It's close at hand.
Okay, very good. Listen, you've got a couple of several interesting topics you wanted to talk about here. The government reorganization that Colleen and I touched on. What's that all about?
Well, this goes back to President Obama's State of the Union speech last year, where he said essentially that he wanted to consolidate trade and competitiveness functions that are now fragmented among a bunch of different agencies and combine them into one. And some folks over at the Office of Management and Budget worked on this, supposedly interviewed a couple hundred people. They submitted their recommendations to the president in June. And then, until last week, the rest was silence. There was no indication of how the administration was going to proceed on this. People were wondering what was going on. And then, essentially, out of the blue, the president last Friday announces that he wants to combine all or parts of at least six different agencies that deal with business and trade functions. Those would include the U.S. Trade Representative, a big chunk of the Department of Commerce, the Export-Import Bank, Small Business Administration, and a couple of others. What he wants to do in this case is first, though, get what's called fast-track authority from Congress, which would be this would require passage of legislation that for any kind of reorganization that the president wanted to pursue, it would go to Congress. Congress could vote it up or down, but presumably without amendments, without the opportunity to filibuster. And the president claims that for about 50 years or so, from the 30s up to mid-80s, presidents did have that authority. It was allowed to lapse, and he wants it back. At this point, however, a lot of crucial details have yet to be disclosed. I checked yesterday. It's not clear when the administration plans to send any legislation to the Hill. It's not even clear what this department, new department, will be called or how quickly the administration wants to implement it. Interestingly, OMB last Friday, after the announcement, put out a memo asking the agencies in question, the six or so, to inventory their programs to in part for planning purposes if this reorganization does go forward. But again, there's no indication of a timeline or time frame for which this would have to be completed.
Well, I know these things aren't done for the convenience of the employees. It's supposed in the perfect world, it's for the good of the government and the taxpayers. But is there a potential downside for employees in all this?
Well, the administration says, and again, we haven't seen any real figures to back this up or to find out where this is coming from. The administration claims that overall 1 to 2 million jobs would be eliminated in sort of the administrative support category, but that this could be done through attrition. They haven't said where, what agencies would bear the brunt of these reductions or how quickly they would occur. They claim, and this actually goes contrary to thinking of a number of experts on reorganization, that this would save, I think, $3 billion over 10 years, but there's been no data to show.
Right, again, short on numbers, but a maximum of 2,000 employees would be lost in this, primarily by attrition. You mentioned, before we were talking earlier off air, about the FAA authorization. In the last year, of course, I think most people realize that a number of FAA employees were furloughed. They're not the rank and file types, but they have specific jobs that deal with, I guess, the safety of or health and safety of air crews and whatnot. Did they ever get their money back?
Yes, they did, actually. It turned out, it was presumed at first that Congress had to, essentially pass legislation that would allow them to be reimbursed, but then the Transportation Department, the FAA's parent agency, did a legal analysis and found that, in fact, no such authority was needed, and as far as I know, everyone was made whole a couple months ago.
Okay. So, and many of those employees worked even though they weren't getting paid because their jobs were considered so essential. So this could happen again?
Well, this all goes back to a reauthorization legislation, and Congress, I think the last permanent reauthorization expired 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. Congress has been operating on a series of short-term extensions ever since then. I think we're up to 21 or 22 now. The latest one expires at the end of the month. I checked with someone on Capitol Hill yesterday who said that essentially they're still where they're at. These are issues, Republicans and Democrats are hung up over issues that have very little to do with the FAA's essential mission. This is This involves, a key sticking point is the conditions under which airline employees can unionize. I was told yesterday, there's been really no movement, and you've got about 2 weeks till the latest extension expires. And if nothing's done by that point, then I guess we'd be back. You know, you have a couple thousand FAA's employees again being furloughed. The betting, though, seems to be that there will at least be another short, once again, maybe the 23rd short-term extension into February.
You know, things like this, it's doing this 21 or 22 or 23 times in recent years, it's a reason that the approval rating of Congress is down to 11% because in this case, they use federal workers and air safety as surrogates for a totally unrelated issue. And they wanted me to mention that we're going to have an emergency test alert. It'll be at 10:47 a.m. So if we suddenly go off the air, stick with us, and you don't have to get under your desk. It is just a test. Sean, one other thing. You're talking about more buyouts.
Oh gosh, the train never stops. Yeah, we've had now General Services Administration plans to offer buyouts and early outs to as many as 650 employees. The Air Force, I think, is offering wants to pursue buyouts or early retirements for hopefully about 4,500 employees. IRS is proceeding with another round. They, as I understand it, concluded just at the end of last year for about 400 employees. I mean, it just doesn't stop.
Well, and Colleen Kelly said that 1,000 IRS workers took buyouts last year. So the fact that lightning has struck once doesn't mean it won't strike again. And would you expect that over the next couple of months, you know, my theory, and I've talked to personnel people about this, is that if you're going to have to offer buyouts, if this is the only way to get to slim the ranks without having a furlough or a layoff, it's most cost effective to do it early in the fiscal year. Fiscal years, of course, start in October. So January, February, and March are prime times now that you have the budgets to decide to offer a buyout, correct?
Certainly. Well, I mean, the sooner you can get people off the rolls, the more money you save. And, I was talking to a budget expert a couple of weeks ago who was saying that if you've budgeted for these positions and they're now vacant, essentially, you're, in government terms anyhow, making money. You're saving money for every person that goes out the door, you start saving as soon as they leave. And it makes sense to try and do that as early in the fiscal year as possible.
Do you have any predictions as to what's likely to come out of this latest, I'm not calling it a super committee, I think it's 13 people, 8 and 5 or something, Democrats and Republicans that are looking at the high five, they're looking at higher contributions to the retirement fund, and they're looking at eliminating the FERS supplement for people who get Social Security. You got any predictions about what they're going to do?
The safe thing, I think, to say that at least some of that stuff will go through, that they will adopt some of those recommendations or the proposals. They've certainly been out there. Some have the, support of the White House, and they would be relatively easy, relatively easy to get through Congress. The high five, I think, is probably, that seems very likely. Increased contributions, also a strong strong possibility.
And that one, to me, seems to be the most disastrous, the increased contributions, because that's a permanent 2 or 3% pay cut. Well, it's permanent.
Absolutely. I mean, it's money that will be more money will be coming out of, in a federal employee's paycheck, so that will be money they won't have to spend.
What about the pay freeze itself? Did the fact that the president proposed a 0.5 raise, normally people would be marching on Washington about that, or federal workers at least would be, but Colleen Kelly seemed to think that it was a hopeful sign that there is not going to be another year of pay freeze.
I can't say it's being embraced, that people are jumping up and down with joy
at
this, but at least, I think there was a concern that we were heading for, an infinite series of pay, just a long-term pay freeze that might go on for a couple more years, just because, again, it's relatively easy to do. There's this movement out there that claims that federal employees are overpaid already.
Yeah.
And so it's simplest to keep it in place. I think this is, as Ms. Kelly indicated, it is an indication that they are at least willing to consider at least incremental or minor increases.
Great. Sean, thanks a bunch for being with us. We have to take a short break here, and when we come back, we'll talk with your colleague, Andy Medici.
the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
That 0.5% pay raise that President Obama is proposing won't come without a fight. Maryland Congressman Elijah Cummings, a Democrat, says he supports the raise, but the idea is not popular among House Republicans. We're just going to have to fight it tooth and nail, he tells Federal News Radio. A station poll shows federal employees had mixed reactions themselves to the idea. Half of respondents said they found the 0.5% hike insulting.
When did you last review your life insurance coverage? WEPA, a nonprofit association founded in 1943, provides life insurance to federal employees at rates significantly less than the federal program. WEPA also has a premium refund policy that's returned over $58 million to its policyholders since 1996. WEPA gives its policyholders more coverage, more benefits, and greater flexibility, yet costs much less. Visit WAEPA.org to learn about all of your options. Again, that's WAEPA.org.
Hey, Eagles fans. Tickets to All American University men's and women's basketball home games in Bender Arena are on sale now. Get them online 24/7 at AUEagles.com or by calling the athletic ticket office at 202-885-TIXX. That's 202-885-TIX. Make your plans now to be part of another historic season in Bender Arena. Catch the Eagles' next home game on Phil Bender Day, Saturday, January 21st against Army at 2 p.m.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday at 10 a.m. here on Federal News Radio. This week, my special guest is Caroline Adams Miller, an amazing coach and a best-selling author of Creating Your Best Life, The Ultimate Life List Guide. Tune in to listen to Caroline. The show is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Vienna, Virginia. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Agencies must move three IT systems to the cloud by mid-2012. Email and workplace collaboration applications are among the most popular early choices, with a number of agencies already successfully moving to web-based email. Which agencies are leading the way? What can other federal employees learn from their experience? Tune in to Federal News Radio Tuesday, January 31st at noon to hear answers to these questions and learn how agencies are taking advantage of the cloud. January 31st, noon, on Federal News Radio, sponsored by Google.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to your turn, Mike Causey. And we'll be talking with Andy Medici from the Federal Times. Andy, are you with us? Andy, are you there? These Medicis are tricky. You know, history has taught us that. Anyhow, I'm going to be stalling here. I have a number of questions for Andy, and a reminder that we are going to have the test, alert test in a minute. Andy, are you there?
I'm right here, Mike.
Hey, I understand you were a classmate of our own Julia Ziegler at American University.
Yes, go Eagles.
Okay, right. Well, you heard that we did a commercial for them. She's been outrageous since she got her master's. She's wearing her cap and gown today. We have a reorganization plan every day, so thank you for that, Andy.
Well, they're loose and roomy, so I wouldn't.
Yes. Hey, listen, talking about loose and roomy, are federal workers getting bigger or are federal offices shrinking?
Well, I think it's the second one. Federal offices are shrinking. Agencies across the board have realized that there is some real money that they could save by sort of squeezing feds into smaller spaces. We've seen it at General Services Administration, Treasury Department, a bunch of others. And if you're thinking that workspaces, you know, can't get any smaller, then you're wrong, because we've seen things that are, for example, called touchdown stations. Basically, a small table with a laptop port, maybe a telephone, maybe about 4 feet by 3.5 feet, things like that.
And this is going on, you say, Treasury, GSA, and whatnot. And, you know, I suspect, without getting into a big fight here, that all the statistics tell us that Americans are getting bigger. We are horizontally.
This is a test of the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Operational Area Emergency Alert System. In the event of an emergency, this system would bring you important information.
Everybody here is crawling out from under their desks, and we're back in the live world now. Now, Andy, that's dangerous territory we're talking about here, but all the statistics show that Americans are getting bigger and seriously heavier. Airlines have noted this and a variety of things, and yet you say the government agencies are squeezing more people into an office or squeezing people into smaller spaces?
Yeah, that's right. You see, federal agencies, they can only do so much on the cost-cutting side. We've talked about reductions in force. We've talked about furloughs and cutting pay, things like that. But a lot of what agencies spend is on the areas that they use to house employees. So that, you know, comes from facilities, leasing space, energy costs, those sorts of things. And by trying to squeeze employees close together, they can reduce some lease space. They can maybe save a few dollars. There's actually, you know, real money. Agencies can save, you know, millions of dollars in lease space if they, you know, apply this across their portfolio of properties.
Well, you know, I was thinking while you were here, the Patent and Trademark Office has beautiful headquarters in Alexandria, and yet a lot of their people now are working from home, so they don't need that office space. Maybe they could get in the leasing business for other federal agencies.
I've definitely heard about the Patent and Trademark Office. If you've been to, any conference, you've probably heard Danette Campbell, and she's talked about how they've really gone aggressively on telework and hoteling. Basically, they've saved about $19 million since they started this in the early 90s. They saved through cost avoidance. But basically, you know, with hoteling, employees, if they do come to work, they reserve that space for that day, and they do not have a permanent workspace, which I know is an issue with a lot of feds.
Yeah, so they actually, if I work from home, and they tell me to come in for the day, they'll put me up in a hotel for that night?
Well, there might not be a fresh mint on your pillow, but what they'll do is they have check-in systems where you'll basically see a map of your office, check out which office or which workstation you want to be at, and that will reserve you for that day. That way, if you're not there, someone else will be able to use that space instead, so they can reduce the overall number of spaces.
So instead of Motel 6, it might be Motel 3 or something like that.
Maybe a little less.
Downsized a little bit. How about these congressional budget cuts, and what's their impact on this construction of a Department of Homeland Security headquarters and other federal facilities?
Well, about the Department of Homeland Security, they have put all their eggs in one basket on this consolidation in Southeast D.C. We're talking more than 51 buildings, a brand new Coast Guard headquarters, more than 100 acres in this old abandoned facility for the mentally ill, and it was supposed to be $3.45 billion, and even though they went ahead with the project and have managed to secure all the funds they need to finish the Coast Guard facility, Congress has lost their stomach for large projects like this. So, for example, in 2011, the administration asked for $668 million for the project, but got about $77 million. So you can sort of see that they're not getting the funding that they need, and that's going to delay the project, and that's going to end up costing the government more.
Yeah, and Homeland Security, the property you're talking about is the former St. Elizabeth's Hospital.
That's correct.
Correct, a governmental facility that has housed some very famous inmates from Ezra Pound on down. What about the FBI headquarters? Is this serious talk about moving the FBI out of the J. Edgar Hoover building on Pennsylvania Avenue?
Well, I mean, earlier studies have shown that the facility doesn't really meet the FBI's needs. Now, we've heard a lot about the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee passing a resolution that would authorize GSA to search for another spot. The only problem is that the House Transportation Infrastructure Committee has to pass a similar resolution for GSA to really move forward with this. And I checked on the Hill, and it doesn't seem like that's going to come up very soon.
I was down at the FBI headquarters not that long ago and had to go in or was invited in, and I have never seen such tough internal security. The people were nice and polite, but you go into things that revolve and you're pinned in and looked at it. And they said part of that is because they're so close to the street that it's in danger of attack from the street.
Well, yeah, setbacks are a really important part of federal security nowadays, especially after September 11th. And any new facility for the FBI would have to be set back 80, 100, even more from the street. So that's why they're looking at facilities that are basically outside the Beltway but close to metro transportation. So, for example, a warehouse complex in Springfield is one of the top candidates right now.
Andy, because you covered federal workplaces literally and in space and all that, do you do stroll-throughs of federal agencies?
To the St. Elizabeth campus twice, GSA headquarters, FDA's White Oak. I do stroll-throughs when I can.
Yeah, in the good old days before 9/11, it used to be there was easy access to federal offices, and I found it. I just go and walk around them downtown, and you know, look on bulletin boards and see what people are doing. I don't know if bulletin boards exist anymore, but getting in them is very tough.
Well, you know, there have been a lot of recent instances we can talk of, you know, and the IRS building, the Marshals in Las Vegas, but you know, there's a strong emphasis on security nowadays, and that's going to come at a premium in terms of cost, in terms of what you'll have to pay to get those facilities.
Well, I think Colleen Kelly mentioned, I think she said there are 400 IRS offices nationwide, 700 IRS offices nationwide, and I imagine providing security for them and for Social Security, two of those agencies that touch the public, must be a tremendous effort. And we recall a couple of years ago in Austin, Texas, the guy who rented or stole an airplane and crashed it into a private building that IRS had leased offices and killed at least one IRS employee. The security concerns must be staggering now.
They are indeed. With the Mark, you know, we have the Mark Center that's going up in Alexandria, Virginia, and there's a whole host of security concerns. Agencies have to think about people, you know, entering the building unlawfully, but also, you know, truck bombs. And, you know, even when it comes to cases like airplanes, it's largely in the hands of other federal agencies who police the skies. And when you get a federal facility that you're building, you have to take into account all of those things, and it could add millions of dollars to the cost of any building.
Very good. Andy, thank you so much for being with us. I'll give your regards to Julia, and thank you, Sean, and we'll glad you all joined us. Remember, we're archived, so you can listen to this show or any of our shows anytime on your computer, at home, or at work. We'll see you next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Have a good week.